Hello, this is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 29th of June, 2018. The extracts, excuse me, from the Hampshire Chronicle this week have been edited by Angela Ling, Carol Fraser and Jane Thomas. And your readers today are Maria Head.
Hello.
Andrew Parkinson.
Hello.
And Daphne Poupart.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Vara Williams. The main headlines this week are Mother Faces Son's Killer Across Court, Resignation sparks uncertainty as Tories lose their majority, and regeneration vision is approved by council. So please, Maria, could we have the story behind the first headline?
Mother faces son's killer across court. A mother looked at her son's killer for the first time and told him about the impact of the death of Carl Scott. Molly Child had not been able to see David Gray until his sentencing at Winchester Crown Court. She had attended numerous hearings, but had never been able to see her son's killer in person. The judge gave special permission for Ms. Child, her mother and Mr. Scott's father, to leave the public gallery from where the dock cannot be seen, to sit in court for the hearing last Thursday. Miss Child, formerly of Chatham Road Stanmore, now living in Bournemouth, addressed Gray, sitting just a couple of yards away. She told him her son's death had changed her life and even made her consider suicide. "I can't walk in Winchester without becoming upset, thinking Carl was once here, sometimes thinking I have seen him alive and well." She spoke minutes before Gray, 36, of no fixed abode, received a hospital order for an indefinite period. Gray had carried out bloody axe and knife attack and left Mr. Scott, 37, to die in February 2017. His body lay undiscovered in a flat at Birch Court, Thurmond Crescent, Stanmore, until the following month. He denied murder, but a trial at Winchester was dropped because his mental health made him unfit to plead. Last month, a jury decided that he had killed Mr. Scott. Sentencing, Judge J. Miller QC said it had been a brutal attack and Gray had left Mr. Scott to die. The judge said, "Psychiatrists say you are a future risk of causing serious harm. You have auditory hallucinations instructing you to commit violent acts. The risk to the public is high. It was a violent and brutal murder. The likelihood of committing further offences is very high indeed, especially as you are unlikely to take medication and due to your illicit drug use. The question is whether the public need protection. The public most certainly do." The hospital order means Gray will only be released if doctors deem him fit and if a mental health tribunal agrees. Consultant psychiatrist Amit Chatterjee, based at Thornford Park Hospital in Reading, told the court that Gray is a paranoid schizophrenic. Dr. Chatterjee said, "There had been some improvement in his health recently, but he still had auditory hallucinations, was paranoid and irritable, and often refused to take medication."
This article is headlined, "Resignation Sparks Uncertainty as Tories Lose Their Majority," and it's accompanied by a photograph of Councillor Kim Gottlieb. Confusion has been cast over the future running of Winchester City Council after a Tory councillor quit, wiping out the party's majority. Councillor Kim Gottlieb announced he will sit as an independent member after writing to leader Caroline Horrell to resign from the Conservatives. It follows the party's lead being cut to just one at May's elections, and as the Lib Dems increase their number of councillors to 22. The Tories now also have 22, with Councillor Gottlieb as the sole independent. As the Chronicle went to press, Lib Dem group leader Councillor Lucille Thompson said the party was considering a vote of no confidence in the leadership after Councillor Gottlieb's brave step. She added that they were in discussions with council officers to establish whether they should now be given more power in committees looking at key decisions. If a no-confidence vote did take place, Councillor Gottlieb, who represents Alresford and the Itchen Valley, said, "I have no confidence in the current administration and will be voting accordingly." In his letter, he accused the council of a lack of humanity and arrogance. He said, "It was an immensely difficult decision to make, but I felt that it was necessary because there seems to be no other way to prompt the change of course that the council urgently needs to take." The Bar End Sports Centre in Silver Hill comprise wonderful opportunities for the city and the district, but, as things stand, poor strategic thinking and decision-making mean that they will very likely result in great disappointment. Unfortunately, it seems that the administration cannot be persuaded to change its position on anything. Councillor Gottlieb was the rebel and the rebel councillor whose legal challenge in 2016 scuppered the first Silver Hill scheme. The announcement follows the approval of the council's vision for both the Winchester Sports and Leisure Park and Silver Hill 2, officially known as the Central Winchester Regeneration Project. A planning application has now been submitted by the council to build a £38 million sports centre to replace the River Park Centre, while councillors will also look at how to implement the regeneration of the city centre. Councillor Gottlieb also criticised the council's lack of transparency. He said, "Change is also needed in the way the council is governed. Promises of transparency and inclusiveness made at the start of your tenure 18 months ago are unfulfilled. At times, it seems that the decision-making process could not be more opaque and exclusive." Referring to the Claire Lloyd-Jones report, which followed the collapse of the first Silver Hill scheme, he added, "The council has put more effort and taxpayers' money into shooting the messenger rather than paying heed to the message of its previous unlawful conduct." Responding to the news on Monday, Councillor Horrell said, "I am disappointed to have received Councillor Gottlieb's email and do not recognise the accusations that he has made. The vast majority of people in Winchester simply want the council to get on with regenerating our city and district, and we are doing that right now. We know this because residents have made their feelings and thoughts known through the biggest consultations the district has ever engaged in for the Central Winchester Regeneration Project and the new sport and leisure facility, and during the May election. We have listened intently, and we have worked hard to come up with projects that work for everyone. It's difficult to see what is arrogant about this approach. The fact is that the Conservative City Council is on the cusp of great achievements for the district, particularly in its regeneration plans, and we very much want to continue with our residents' ambition and core values to make Winchester an even better place to live and work for everyone." Asked whether he had formed any deals with the Lib Dems, Councillor Gottlieb said, "I have not made any deal with the Lib Dems. It is just that in my discussions with their leadership, I find more preparedness to listen and to explore and more sense of a vision of how Winchester can be regenerated. They also seem to be far more in tune with what residents and the local sports clubs really want at the proposed new sports centre at Bar End.
Regeneration vision is approved by council. The regeneration of Central Winchester has moved a step closer after civic chiefs gave the green light to the vision for Silver Hill 2. Officially known as the Central Winchester Regeneration Project, the guidance, known as a Supplementary Planning Document, or SPD, was adopted by the council at its cabinet last week. It follows a long period of engagement with residents and businesses that started more than a year ago. However, not everyone was happy with the move. Former Labour City Councillor Patrick Davies told the meeting the report, quotes, sets out a very sad, extravagantly expensive and depressing end to what started life in February last year as an encouraging and optimistic public engagement exercise. In implying that the changes now in front of you are as a result of consultation with the public in the exercise ending on February the 5th this year, surely the report should make absolutely clear that the fundamental changes now proposed have overruled many public comments. Close quotes. As previously reported, changes to the document caused sparks to fly between councillors at an overview and scrutiny committee meeting earlier this month. Following a legal challenge, believed to be by THRE, the previous developer, which still owns the Friarsgate building, the wording used was altered, with should becoming may, requires becoming expected, and must becoming could, to name a few. Hitting back at Mr. Davies' claims, council leader Caroline Horrell said, "The fundamentals of the vision have not changed." In a statement, she added, "I am delighted that my Conservative administration has been able to deliver this significant document that will guide the regeneration of this important part of our city centre. I would like to thank colleagues on the IPG, Informal Policy Group, who have been committed to getting a robust document that Cabinet was able to adopt. But we couldn't have done it without the input from everyone who took the time to come and see us at the events around the district and who shared their views in person, online and in writing at the different stages throughout this project." The council will now turn to working with architects, urban designers, financial and legal advisers, as well as other landowners in the area, to bring the regeneration vision to fruition bit by bit. The first step will be a meeting of the Central Winchester Regeneration Committee, which will be held on Tuesday, July the 10th at 4:30 p.m. in the Guild Hall.
Here are the death notices. Beer, Margaret Beer, at Royal Hampshire County Hospital. Crockford, Kenneth Crockford, aged 92. Daly, Robert Daly, peacefully, aged 98. Deer, Eileen Deer, née Graves, in her sleep at Royal Hampshire County Hospital. Dyer, Nigel James Dyer, aged 59. Green, Valerie Ann Green, at Abbots Barton Care Home, aged 73. Mort, Adrian Mort, aged 48. Nicholson, Valerie Nicholson, after a short illness. Norris, Elsie Joyce Norris, at the Countess Mountbatten Hospice, aged 86. Again, Norris, Patricia Norris, Mayor of Winchester, 1995-6. Owen, Joan Rosalind Owen, after a short illness. Perryman, Barbara Gail Perryman, peacefully, aged 97. Rudiak, William John Rudiak, aged 26. Thorne, Elsa Thorne, aged 77, and finally Williams, Joan Williams, aged 95. And now we'll go over to Maria, please, for Christian comment.
And Christian comment this week is written by the Reverend Canon Mark Collinson and is very topically headed, Aiming for the Goal. One of my Canon colleagues is a Saints fan and is just loving the World Cup. The other day, someone at the cathedral was heard to say that he hoped the sermon wouldn't be too long because he was having his grandchildren to come over for lunch. There would be no way my colleague would have had grandchildren over when England were playing. He was glued to the telly and rewarded with 6 goals against Panama. I love the little stats charts that pop up now and then that tell you things like how long each side has held possession of the ball. Holding on to the ball is kind of important if you want to score a goal. One of the charts tells us how many shots at the goal have actually been on target. Again, if you want to score a goal, there's no point blasting the ball over the net and never hitting the target. You have to aim for the goal. The chapter of the cathedral recently had a 24-hour session focusing on what our aims are. What's the point of the cathedral? How do we know what to aim for? And how would we know if we have scored a goal? Do we measure cathedral success by full congregations, a healthy balance sheet, and lots of tourist visitors? We were told that it might take 2 or 3 years for us to focus on what distinctive contribution we could make to the city of Winchester and the county of Hampshire. So we haven't worked it out yet. Jesus had a clear goal and purpose for his life. Nothing was going to stop him from achieving it. His goal was to make it possible for you to find your purpose in life. He was a kind of life coach who helps you discover the meaning of your life and what your life is for. However, unlike any life coaches I know, he was committed beyond anything you could describe to help people achieve their goals. He knew he had to sacrifice his own life in order to help us relate to God and find our purpose in life. Jesus not only helps you hit your goal, he becomes the goal of your life. A friend of mine used to work for a large tobacco company selling cigarettes. In fact, he spent some time in Russia flogging cigarettes to the Russians. Meeting Jesus completely changed his life. He started the first ever Alpha course in Moscow, which is a short program you can go on to get to know who Jesus is. He integrated his work and life with Jesus's goal. This weekend, the cathedral celebrates the lives of 19 people whose lives have been turned around by Jesus Christ. They are being ordained and are so publicly proclaiming for the rest of their lives to help other people discover their goals in life. They're there to help you achieve your goal. Have you scored yours? And that's the Reverend Canon Mark Collinson, Canon Principal of Winchester Cathedral.
We come to letters to the editor. And the first letter is read by Andrew, please.
And this letter is titled Mongrel Nation. It's from Tom Williams. Sir, your correspondent, Mark Rowe, in a letter, England Dreaming, to the Chronicle on Letters, June 14th, is utterly wrong. The great benefit of living in England is that it's a mongrel nation, having successfully absorbed people from many nations. In my own case, my 8 great-grandparents comprise 4 from Wales, 2 from England, and 1 each from Scotland and Ireland. I am truly British, although being born and living in England for nearly 80 years. Mr. Rowe also erroneously invokes the monarch in support of his cause. In fact, there is no Queen of England. Her Britannic Majesty's title is Queen of the United Kingdom of Great Britain and Northern Ireland and all her other realms and territories. There's not been a truly English monarch since Harold II, and he was killed at the Battle of Hastings. Since then, the monarchs have been Norman, Angevin and Plantagenet, French, Tudor, which is Welsh, Stuart, Scots, and Hanoverian, Saxe-Coburg, Gotha, and Windsor, which of course are German. The last monarch to have an English spouse was James II, whose first wife was Anne Hyde, and of course the Queen Mother was a Scot. So, I'm sorry, Mr. Rowe, you start from false premises and have no argument. And that's from Tom Williams of Hairstock Road, Winchester.
And on the same theme, there's a letter here from Roger Stevens. Sir, I read Mr. Rowe's letter, England Dreaming, Chronicle June 14, with some interest, but did not immediately see the joke. Not content with Brexit, are we now going to fragment even further by separating ourselves from the Welsh, the Scots, and the people of Northern Ireland? Should we repair Hadrian's Wall and rebuild Offa's Dyke? Perhaps we in Winchester should go further and declare UDI to free our city from the yoke of Westminster. The delightful prospect of not hearing anything more of our local MPs would be sorely tempered by the prospect of being ruled by our city council. Perhaps those who propose further fragmentation of Great Britain should take their cue from our Brexit leaders. There is Mr. Dacre, the editor of the wildly pro-Brexit Daily Mail, who has chosen this moment to announce his resignation. Why isn't he remaining, no pun intended, to carry his newspaper through this challenging pre-Dexit period into the glorious Brexit dawn? Then there is Mr. Rees-Mogg. It has been reported in The Guardian that the city firm he co-founded has set up an investment fund in Ireland and is warning prospective clients about the financial dangers of the sort of hard Brexit favoured by the Tory MP. What about Nigel Lawson, former Chancellor of the Exchequer and former chair of the Vote Leave campaign, who is applying for his official French residency card so that he can stay permanently in France after Brexit? It's said that there are creatures that can sense when a ship is sinking. And that comes from Roger Stevens, Cliffway, Compton.
And the next rather mysterious letter comes from Bill Reed. Sir, I am researching a murder case which was tried at Hampshire Assize in the Great Hall in July 1942, Rex versus Ferber. I have visited the Great Hall and have a photograph of the courtrooms as it was then and up to 1974. I also have reports of the proceedings. I would like to gain some general information on the layout of the courtroom and the procedure that would have been adopted at the start of the trial. Also about Justice Charles, who tried the case. If any of your readers can help, I would be very pleased to hear from them. Bill Reed, 64 Abbey Row, Malmesbury, Wiltshire, SN16 OAQ, and his email address is bill@euclidvillas.co.uk.
This next letter is a letter of thanks to the Theatre Royal, and it comes from Georgiana Robertson. Sir, I write on behalf of all the trustees, staff, performers and supporters of the Blue Apple Theatre to thank all the staff of Theatre Royal Winchester for the continuing support given to our charity in staging productions at this wonderful venue. Our recent show, Winchester, the First 100 Million Years, was another resounding success for Blue Apple Theatre, and we cannot express strongly enough how much it means to our large company of local performers most of whom have learning disabilities, to take part in productions on such a grand scale. We are very grateful to Derek Newland, Chief Executive of Theatre Royal Winchester, and his team for all the care and hospitality given to our charity throughout our production week. And that's from Georgiana Robertson, Chairman of the Board of Trustees, Blue Apple Theatre, Sparkford Road, Winchester.
And this letter comes from Tony Foote, and it's headed, Thanks, NHS. Sir, sadly, over the last few weeks, there has been much in the news that might just depress ardent supporters of that incredible, much undervalued, occasionally berated institution that is the National Health Service. Revelations from Gosport have probably not helped, but it must not be forgotten that the vast majority of people working within it do so to the very best of their ability. Talk of increased funds through taxation, something I have been advocating for at least 30 years to anyone who will listen, is long overdue, although I'll believe it when it happens. I am minded too of another anniversary, the end of that wasteful Great War. Instead of creating fields of poppies or more monuments, shouldn't those many thousands of men and women who have over the last century given their lives for us have a proper legacy, a properly funded NHS? We are apparently the seventh richest economy in the world, though Brexit, a mistake if ever there was one, may change that. So at the top of the country's list should be NHS, education and housing. And not too far behind, defence. A true monument to all those sacrifices on the Somme and beyond. Personally, I cannot praise the NHS too highly. Just over a week ago, I spent a day in the care of the treatment centre of the Burrell Wing at Winchester's Royal Hampshire County Hospital. From reception to discharge, I could not have received better care and attention. Everything was explained, I was put at my ease, and the procedure required was carried out with skill and efficiency. Recovery was relaxing, and everything was done with care, concern, and good humour. Thanks to all in the treatment centre, you are a credit to the service. And that comes from Tony Foote, Kestrel Close, Bishop's Waltham.
And the next letter from Ted Smith is headed, Trash City. Sir, last weekend, by way of a family treat to celebrate three birthdays, I visited Birmingham with family members. As befitting a large city, there was a lot going on. At night, the place is jumping but very genial and well policed. The most amazing thing about the city centre is that it is kept so spotlessly clean. Following mornings, after the Friday and Saturday festivities, right in the heart of the action, we walked out of our hotel to find that the streets were near immaculate, with no rubbish to be seen. The streets are clear of weeds growing everywhere. How depressing it was to return to Winchester, my home for almost 78 years, to see the state of the city. There are weeds everywhere you look, and the high street at night with the overflowing bins are a disgrace. Come on, Winchester City Council, and get the place cleaned up. Ted Smith, Take Down Meads, Winchester.
This is a letter titled High Street Vision, and it's sent in by Andrea Owen. Sir, our local MP, Steve Brine, has had his eyes checked. Let's hope he bought some new glasses. He clearly does not see the high street in the same way as those of us who have to do our everyday shopping there. I would not wish to question his statistics. I'm sure they're just as reliable as those which the government produces in the hope they will blind us to the reality of our experience, nor his assertion that he spent an evening at the Winchester Business Awards surrounded by modern-minded entrepreneurs with thriving businesses. Having looked at the list of winners, not many of them appear to see the high street as a place to do business. Apart from eating places and some standard chain offerings, there is little that is individual or a special interest. Without the supermarkets and market stalls, we would have no meat, no fish, no fruit, nor vegetables. This is why the farmers' market is such an important asset in the food offering in Winchester. I would suggest to the City Council that the farmers' market is not shelved every time they want to put on some other quote-unquote fun event. Some of us rely on it, even though it is a shadow of its former self. I fear that Mr. Brine's, quote, letter from Westminster, quote, is just that, another example of the government trotting out their complacent line in the face of all the evidence. And that's from Andrea Owen of Culverwell Gardens, Winchester.
And now a letter from Mrs. Deirdre Dauncey, headed Cathedral Shame. Sir, this message should be of interest to all visitors to Winchester Cathedral, particularly those with a strong connection to the services in the cathedral. After 5 years as a chorister, including as head chorister, our son was proud to take his 14-year-old daughter, who lives in France, to see the chorister's name board in the vestry, where his name is displayed. He was refused admission by an officious foreign person who needed to learn the advantages of tourism, and particularly how to show appreciation for the years of service our young choristers give every day of the week, including Easter and Christmas Day. Shame on you, Winchester. You'll never earn the funds to preserve the cathedral when you treat so shabbily those who supported you so wholeheartedly. And that's from Mrs. Deirdre Dauncey, Longjumel, Loire Valley, France.
And the next letter comes from Paul Derry and concerns recycling woes. Sir, I recently cleared some bushes and whilst doing so discovered a broken garden ornament in two small pieces. On taking the whole lot down to the Bar End Recycling Centre, I went to deposit the two small pieces of concrete in the appropriate bin. An operative on the bin, without hesitation, told me that it would cost me. I said okay, and that I would put them in with the general waste. This I did, but was then harangued by the same operative who told me I would still be charged, and he proceeded to note down my registration number. What is going on? Does this mean that the tip does not accept any hardcore material, however small, without a charge? If this is the case, then one can imagine what will happen to similar pieces of concrete from now on. Exactly the opposite of what recycling was meant to achieve. Tippers beware. Paul Derry, Stony Lane, Week, Winchester.
And this letter is quite a timely reminder, and it's titled I Care, and it's from Terry Smith. So, in its quest to promote I Health Care, OpenSite Hampshire, as the country's principal sight loss organisation, is actively supporting Macular Awareness Week, which runs from June the 25th to July. Macular Awareness Week is a great opportunity to spread the word about how amazing our eyes are. This year's focus is on the importance of getting regular eye tests. A regular eye examination is an important health check for everyone, young and old alike, and can often detect the early signs of many eye and general health conditions before symptoms become apparent. OpenSite Hampshire therefore highly recommends that every member of the family should pay regular visits to an optician. Don't forget, for children and the over 60s, eye tests are free, with many of the high street opticians also offering free or excellent value tests for all other ages too. For a free copy of the OpenSite Hampshire Guide to Good Eye Health, call 02380-641-244 or email info@opensite.org.uk. And that's from Terry Smith, the Community Development and Support Manager, OpenSite, Church Road, Bishopstoke.
And now a short letter from John Peters, headed Cycle of Misery. Sir, does Winchester Council give a damn about cycling and cyclists? Doesn't look like it. Nick Ray, Chronicle, letters June 21, is right. The city is hopeless for provision for cyclists. Much ballyhoo about bike festivals, yet very few safe routes for families to cycle into and around the city. Could it be that the council has been obsessed for years with grand projets that never see the light of day, while sensible steps to enhance citizens' health, quality of life and the city's environment have been neglected, such as providing a coherent network of cycle routes into the city instead of token unconnected stretches? Action on safe cycling in Winchester is long overdue, and that comes from John Peters, Halls Farm Close, Hairstock.
And the final letter today comes from Jeff Pilliner and is headed Battle Over Cones. I wonder whether the people of Oxford are aware that their Chamber of Commerce is using aggressive tactics to pursue their own agenda, with scant concern for the elderly or for the movement of traffic through the town. The point at issue is the use of cones to hold parking space outside the community centre for reasons of road safety. For many years, cones have been used for the Town Trust minibus, bringing the elderly to the regular coffee morning each Friday, and also by the country market to avoid congestion from loading each Thursday, following instructions from the police. We all know that parking is a problem in Oxford. We also know that the junction at the top of Broad Street is busy and potentially dangerous, with 48-ton trucks frequently turning out of Broad Street and a bus stop near the junction. The cones have been deployed to avoid elderly people with walking aids having to cross the road there and to avoid obstruction to the traffic flow. Will it take a fatal road accident to stop this vendetta by the Chamber of Commerce against the deployment of cones outside the community centre when they are essential to road safety? Jeff Pilliner, Bramble Hill, Oxford.
If you wish to contact the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so by telephoning 01962 860 836, or you can email news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. And now we come to what's on. There's so much going on at the Winchester Festival from the 6th to the 14th of July, taking place all over the city. Jeremy Paxman, Mary Berry, John Humphreys and Richard Dawkins are speaking, and there is a multitude of concerts. Full details are available at www.winchesterfestival.co.uk. Events at the Theatre Royal can be booked on 01962 840 440, and for all others, ring the Cathedral Box Office on 01962 857 276. The magic of a summer's evening is reflected in a programme of folk songs from round the British Isles and beyond, to be performed by Oxford Community Choir at St John's Church, Oxford, on Saturday the 7th of July at 7:30 p.m. This is one of the largest community choirs in the country. Tickets cost £15, or £12 for concessions, from Oak Leaf Stationery, Oxford, or online at www.oxfordchoir.com. And I expect on the door. On Wednesday the 11th of July, the Winchester Science Centre will be holding two space lectures, one at 4:30 p.m. and the other one at 6:30. and the subject of the lectures is that cosmology has made gigantic leaps over the last half century. Our perception of the universe has undergone a shift. We now know, in inverted commas, that it expanded from a hot Big Bang. We know its size, its temperature, and how fast it's expanding. And all of this with a precision undreamt of only 50 years ago. We now have our standard model of the universe. This knowledge, besides painting a beautiful new picture of our universe, has also revealed a deeper and unexpected mystery. If our standard model is correct, we have no idea what 95% of the universe is made of. The speakers are chosen from the best academic speakers in the UK, with a talent for explaining difficult concepts and the knowledge to give the very latest news from the research community. Although the primary audience is adults, older children are also welcome to attend. Tickets cost £8 or £6 for the 4:30 event, and £10 or £8 for the evening event. And at the end of each lecture, there's a planetarium show. And you can book online at www.winchestersciencecentre.org, or you can ring 01962 863 791. Now, from the files brings us the historical news, starting with 200 years ago, and that's from Andrew.
Here's a couple of items from 200 years ago, Monday, June 29th, 1818. And the first is, the attention of the public during the past week has been engaged, to the exclusion of almost every other matter, by the contested elections which have been carried on in different parts of the kingdom, with an ardour of no common kind. Although he doesn't quote it there, we should probably remember that those elections were held primarily by a select part of the community.
Yeah, witness Poldark recently. Sorry.
The second item is, on Thursday last, died in Southgate Street, aged 82, Mrs. Mary Fielder, housekeeper to Mrs. A.S. Heathcote. This faithful and honest servant had lived in the Heathcote family for nearly 60 years.
And 100 years ago, that Saturday, June the 29th, 1918, and the first item is in the context of the Great War. We are pleased to hear that a special Thanksgiving service will be held in the nave of the cathedral on Thursday, July the 4th, to thank God for the entrance of America into the war. The service will be in the nave at 5:30 p.m. and has the hearty concurrence of the headquarters staff of the American troops in Winchester. It is impossible to say how many USA soldiers will be in Winchester at the time, and therefore what number will be able to attend. But in no doubt the citizens will join in the service in large numbers and show how cordially we welcome our new and powerful ally. And the second item, the Mayoress of Winchester is organising a Sailors' Day to be held on Saturday next, the 6th of July, in order to send a contribution from the City of Winchester to King George's Fund for Sailors, which helps every branch of the Navy.
And there are also two items from 50 years ago, Saturday, June the 29th, 1968. The proposal to build a refuse incinerator at Poles Lane, Otterbourne, was the subject of a statement by the chairman of Winchester RDC, Mr. E.N.T. Dickinson, at the monthly meeting on Wednesday. There has been considerable ferment from residents in Compton, Hursley and Otterbourne over the scheme, and a petition has been signed by 200 people. Mr. Dickinson said that he hoped by this statement to give these people a better understanding of our needs and also to allay some, if not all, of their fears. The statement was made in reply to a question from Colonel Gibbs. the council is proposing to take immediate action by asking the Minister of Housing and Local Government to hold a public inquiry so that everyone will have an opportunity of stating their views. Further discussion at council level should wait until the Local Government Operational Research Unit has made its report on the best sites for a series of incinerators to cover South Hampshire. A meeting has been called by the County Council to consider this report from a team of independent investigators. The meeting will be held on July the 23rd and the RDC will be represented. And the second item, the first open day to be held at King Alfred's College attracted large crowds to wander around exhibitions and entertainments on Saturday. It was planned entirely by the students with the intention of giving friends of the college an opportunity to see some of the recent developments. These include not only the work of students at the college and in schools, but the building programme, which is constantly expanding within the limited site. In the past, the college has always held a fete, and the intention in abandoning that idea for this year was to show exactly how the students spend their time. The exhibits were organised to give an impression of both theoretical activities and the practical use of these ideas during teaching practice in schools.
And now we have two articles from 25 years ago, and that's back in Friday, June the 22nd, 1993. And the first of those, which concerns the student loans, is probably as relevant today as it was 25 years ago. The disastrous and incompetent system, which is in quotes, of student loans has led to student poverty and a more elitist further education system, a Winchester meeting heard. Liam Jonecki, a member of the NHS National Executive, warned of further government attacks on students during a Winchester and District Trades Union Council meeting at the Guildhall on Tuesday. He argued that Education Secretary John Patton and his plans to legislate for voluntary membership of student unions, where students would opt in to become NUS members, would lead to a massive drop in support services at colleges. Noting that the growth of student union services had been, quote, the business success story of the 1980s, unquote, he estimated that more than 7,000 jobs could be lost nationwide if the changes were forced through. With the Conservatives now having second thoughts about their plan, he said, Tory MPs just didn't realise that by a simple vote in the House of Commons, they will be putting literally hundreds of people in their constituencies out of work. King Alfred's College NUS officer, Karen Thompson, said Winchester students were now living on poverty income levels £10 per week below those receiving income support and housing benefit. Her Winchester NUS colleague, Isabel McLaren, said local students would suffer if voluntary membership became a reality. There would be a huge cut in services provided by King Alfred's College Student Union. The second article concerns single parents. Single parents in Winchester met to protest at remarks made about them by Jerry Malone, MP. They discussed at length how to achieve a meeting with him after several unsuccessful attempts and formed a group to represent their interests. On Saturday morning, they managed a brief meeting with Mr. Malone, who said he would see them during the summer recess. About 35 single parents, mainly women, but including half a dozen men, were at the meeting in Parchment Street on Friday evening to vent their anger at the MP. They referred to the MP's letter to Westminster in the March the 5th edition of the Hampshire Chronicle this year. In that, Mr. Malone stated, and I quote, In some urban housing estates, the sighting of a father is as common as spotting a dodo. What else can we expect from single parenthood when it's the key to the benefits cornucopia? To get a house, have a child. When funds run low, have another. The house will be furnished with all mod cons as married couples wait in the queue. Unquote. At Friday's meeting, a video made by King Alfred's College students who support the single parents was shown. This was composed of interviews with women in Winchester who are single parents. One woman on the video said, quote, "I don't want to live on £70 a week for the rest of my life." 50% of single parents are living on benefits. They would love to get off it. And that ends the quote.
And now over to Daphne, please, for first person.
And this is headed Fixing the Internet by Khalid Aziz. It's time to sort out the internet. Just to make it clear, I'm no antediluvian Luddite. I love the internet. It makes my life easier. When Sir Tim Berners-Lee invented the World Wide Web, he put himself in the same league as other great inventors, such as Thomas Edison, light bulbs, and Alfred Nobel, dynamite. However, like dynamite, in the wrong hands, the internet wreaks havoc on people's lives. Governments haven't caught up and are still spending much of their time hand-wringing when they should be taking firm action to protect the vulnerable. Fraud is an obvious area for action. I was saddened by fellow first-person columnist George Hayter's recent tale of how he lost several thousand pounds after his emails were hacked. For years, the banks have tended to cover up such frauds, quietly reimbursing victims in the hope of maintaining confidence in electronic banking. But this approach, taking the line of least resistance, defies natural justice. Fraudsters go unpunished and they know they can get away with it. True, the global nature of the internet means cybercriminals are often in jurisdictions thousands of miles from the countries of their victims. But cybercriminals can be tracked down. Foreign enforcement agencies should be given the assistance of our crime specialists. Some have even suggested the SAS should be offered to put, quite literally, the fear of death up the perpetrators. Such raids could be filmed and, with supreme irony, posted online for other would-be keyboard criminals to see firsthand what fate awaits them should they dabble in worldwide dishonesty. I must say, the whole idea has great appeal. What gets more attention these days is online trolling. It seems female members of Parliament have been singled out for all sorts of abuse. Unpleasant threats, including rape and murder, come from the vitriol-dipped keyboards of those too cowardly to make conventional methods of communications. Why do they do it? Well, anonymity must hold the key to this. Oh, how we chuckle at all those stupid made-up names from people who think they can say anything under the cover of a pseudonym. How to counter it? Mandate by law that all internet service providers simply don't allow people to use made-up names. After all, to prevent money laundering, we must all provide utility bills and other forms of household identity to conduct any significant financial operations. Why not do the same for email addresses and online identities? When you put your real name to something online, there's less chance you will let your spleen run completely out of control. And if you cannot curb your expression within the realms of decency, then it makes it much easier if people know who you really are and can take appropriate action. The non-compliant simply will have their emails blocked. I can hear the squeals of outrage from the cyberheads citing freedom of expression. Often the media back this view, particularly the newspapers, many of whom have already proved their lack of probity by hacking into the phones of celebrities. It has been said that freedom of speech doesn't include the right to falsely shout fire in a crowded theatre, and there are public order penalties for those who do. It should be the same with the internet. You should be free to express yourself, but within the same constraints applied to face-to-face communications. Those who spend more time than they perhaps should at the keyboard will greatly fear having their access to the internet removed. Such a policy has already been proven with cars. There are said to be a million untaxed and uninsured vehicles on Britain's roads. Fines for culprits go unpaid. Hampshire police make more impact by crushing perpetrators' cars. Apparently they don't like that. And neither would misanthropic internet idiots if they were cut off from their cyber world.
And I believe that editorial comment has something else to say about
it. It does indeed, and it's headed clamping down on the internet trolls. Some might be surprised that the Hampshire Chronicle supports restrictions on free speech. Our columnist, Khalid Aziz, on page 23, eloquently explains why such freedom on the internet is unsustainable. The current situation is that anyone can say what they like on the internet without any comeback. This has led to a woeful coarsening of public life, and for people, usually women, being threatened with physical and or sexual assault. For many years, it seemed to be acceptable that such vile behaviour from men hiding behind the anonymity of the internet was somehow okay. The danger is that these men are actually undermining democracy by scaring people from expressing their views. The time is surely coming that anyone who wishes to contribute to public debate must not be allowed to hide behind the cloak of anonymity. This is not a question of freedom of speech. It is a case where the technology has gone too far, and now is the time for the rules to catch up. The Chronicle supports freedom of speech, but only when people are willing to put their name to their words, when responsibilities catch up with freedoms. In the past, anyone could go to the Buttercross and express their views. But they did not go to the Buttercross and spout vile views whilst wearing a mask over their face. Now is the time to remove the mask from the people who want to enter the public arena online.
Now we come to Belgarum, the lighter side of the news. An alternative look, at any rate. The first one's about Jude's ice cream, which I do really like. Jude's Ice Cream has scooped a role to front Lloyd Banks' new radio advertising campaign. Based in Twyford, the business will feature in a 30-second ad to be broadcast across commercial radio stations in the UK until the end of July. It invites listeners to meet the team behind the business and introduces the business managing directors and even the local cows behind the product. Jude's was founded in 2002 by Theo Mesger and is now managed by him and his family. And there's a picture of Leo Mesger and family, presumably, ready to serve at a kiosk with lots of ice cream tubs. Then there's family leaving the UK. Many residents across Hampshire headed to London on Saturday to attend the Brexit march. Scores of Winchester people were among the estimated 100,000 who marched through the capital calling for a second referendum on the final Brexit deal. But one Winchester family is preparing to make a longer journey, away from the UK to start a new life. Silky Kramer and her family from Abbots Barton will be leaving the UK permanently. She says, "I came to the UK as an EU citizen with almost equal rights compared to British citizens. The UK leaving the EU will mean I have fewer rights unless I take British citizenship. Legal difficulties make this almost impossible for me right now, so I've decided against it. to protect my family from the possible consequences of hostile environment politics, our decision is to go to another EU country where we feel safe. Winchester resident Susie Nicodemi told Belgarum, "Everyone will be affected by Brexit. Seeing friends and colleagues leave is just the start. We need a people's vote on the final deal." And there's a little thing headed, "Impact of a Cashless Society." Frank Pearson is the first city councillor to serve a second term as First Citizen since Barbara Carpenter Turner in the 1970s. It is only 6 years since his last year of service, but times have changed. In his first stint, he helped to raise £30,000. But he tells Belgarum that there is the challenge of people carrying less cash and therefore having fewer pennies to drop into the collection tins. But watch this space, it says. Yes, I suppose collection people will have to have little things, zettels, that you can put your money on from a card. And finally, there's a lovely picture of a little croft, it looks like, tucked away behind an arch. No, not some redundant farm building from the pages of A Year in Provence. It's a medieval outhouse next to the deanery, through a usually closed-off doorway just off Cathedral Close. It currently looks little used, but Belgarum is asking what the future holds. In recent years, the dean and chapter has been raising revenue from letting out the large houses in the close that until recently were lived in by senior cathedral figures. Can it be too long before the lovely cottage is renovated as a weekend bolt hole? And that's the end of Belgarum. We come to the lighting up times. Lighting up time ends today, Friday the 29th of June, at 4:53 a.m. and begins again at 9:24 p.m. On Wednesday the 4th of July, it ends at 4:57 a.m. and begins again at 9:22 p.m. If you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you have received from us, please telephone Irene Dowding on 01962 870 370. And now we come to further items of general news, and we'll start, please, with Maria.
Public exhibition of plans for new leisure centre. At short notice, the City Council has arranged a public exhibition of its proposed new leisure centre. The public will have the chance to see what the Council is proposing at Bar End in exhibitions today, June the 28th, and tomorrow at the Guildhall. One was also held on Monday. Details were only announced on Friday afternoon. Visitors can ask questions of the architects, designers and project team. Councillor Lisa Griffiths, portfolio holder for health and wellbeing, said, "I am delighted that the planning application for the Sport and Leisure Park has been submitted. I'd like to thank our partners, clubs, local residents of the district and national governing bodies for their invaluable input over the last few years. I'm really excited about these plans and I'm looking forward to sharing them with everyone next week. This outstanding facility promises to be one of the best of its kind in the county. The £38 million project will be funded by Winchester City Council with support from the Winchester University, Hampshire County Council and the Pinder Trust." And there's quite a large photograph, an artist's impression, actually, of the proposed Sport and Leisure Centre at Bar End. And it looks enormous, very, very impressive.
This article is headlined "Winchester's Tribute to Its Armed Forces," and it's accompanied by a couple of photographs, one showing servicemen marching on Castle Avenue, and the other of the Lord Lieutenant Nigel Atkinson at the parade. Scores of military personnel lined the streets of Winchester as the city marked the start of Armed Forces Week. Civic leaders joined local people to celebrate the county's servicemen and women by raising a flag outside of the Great Hall. Personnel from the Royal Navy, the Army, and the Royal Air Force also paraded through the streets. The flag will stay raised until Armed Forces Day on June 30th. The Mayor, Councillor Frank Pearson, said, "Winchester is rightly proud of its strong ties with the armed forces, who have been a constant and welcome presence in and around the district for many years. This ceremony is not to glorify war, but to honour those members of the Joint Services who have given their lives for us, along with those who continue to go into danger on our behalf." The County Council's Armed Forces Champion, Councillor Andrew Joy, added, "Our support for our armed forces community, including regulars, reservists, veterans and their families, is constant. Hampshire is home to over 20,000 serving members, as well as one of the largest concentration of veterans in the UK. The County Council is proud to have been one of the first in the UK to sign the Armed Forces Covenant. It's heartening to see and hear how service personnel, their families, veterans, and the wider community in Hampshire continue to benefit from many successful projects funded by the MOD Covenant Fund." Lord Lieutenant Nigel Atkinson had given this quote, and he said, "The annual flag-raising ceremony, which has always been well-supported, is a demonstration of Hampshire's strong commitment to the armed forces."
Naomi's 21st anniversary rent. Naomi House has paid its annual ground rent, a bigger-than-usual bunch of red roses. Two-year-old Emily Smith handed over Naomi House and Jack's Place 21st annual rent payment. Emily Smith from Collingbourne Deuces, Wiltshire, who has Rett syndrome, her mum Amy and dad Adam presented the Cornelius Reed family with the flowers to cover the charity's rent, which is due every Midsummer's Day. The tradition dates back to before Naomi House opened in 1997, when Mary Cornelius Reed allowed a hospice to be built on her land in the Sutton Manor estate. This offer came with two conditions: that the hospice be named after her youngest daughter, Naomi, and that every Midsummer's Day, the hospice pay a peppercorn rent of 12 red roses. This year, however, to mark the hospice's 21st birthday, the rent was increased to 21 red roses. Although Mary Cornelius Reed died in 2014, staff still honour the tradition by presenting a bouquet of flowers to Mary's children, including Naomi. Amy, Emily's mum, said, "Naomi House helps us spend time together as a family and allows us to spend quality time with Emily's brothers, Bobby and Edward. When she's here, we know Emily is well cared for, safe and happy. Emily's future is unclear, but it is comforting to know that we have support should things get really difficult. It was so nice that she was able to pay the rent this year." Mark Smith, chief executive at Naomi House and Jack's Place, said, "I would like to thank the Cornelius Reed family for their ongoing support and thank Emily and family for paying our rent in this, our 21st year. Despite being the day that our rent is due, Midsummer's Day is a moment we all look forward to, as it is an opportunity to celebrate an important part of our history and tradition, as well as a chance to look at how far we have come with the support of the communities we serve. I'm delighted that 21 years on, Naomi House and Jack's Place is still going from strength to strength, reaching out to more medically complex children and young adults than ever before, and delivering innovative and impactful services that make a real and lasting difference on good days, difficult days, and last days." Naomi House and Jack's Place are the hospices for children and young adults across Hampshire, Wiltshire, Dorset, Berkshire, West Sussex, Surrey and the Isle of Wight. The charity cares for 325 life-limited or life-threatened children, young adults and their families. The charity opened its first hospice, Naomi House, in 1997 and has cared for more than 1,144 of the most medically complex children and young adults. And that's accompanied by a delightful photograph of little Emily with her entire family and beautiful big bunch of red roses.
Mm-hmm. Like a bomb, car ploughs into Gates. A man is calling for action after a car smashed into the gates of his house at a dangerous junction. Ross Snowden from Lower Upham is urging highway bosses to improve safety at the junction between Winchester Road and Mortimer's Lane. This comes after a Kia Ceed ploughed into the electric gate of his house in Winchester Road, wrecked the garden wall and hit Ross's cars in the driveway. Mr. Snowden, 38, sales manager, whose house is a few metres away from the junction, said he was woken up by a huge bang and ran outside, where he found the shaken driver, while the other two people who were in the car with him had fled the scene. It was like a bomb went off. There were bricks everywhere. It's amazing that nobody was killed, considering the damage. He said the emergency services were called and the driver was taken to hospital. Ross is now calling for action to prevent similar incidents. That junction is so bad, something has to be done. It shouldn't take a fatality to improve that. What are we waiting for? It's the first time there has been a crash on our wall, but it happened to our neighbours before, the father of two said. He is asking the county council to consider either a roundabout or traffic lights. A spokesperson for Hampshire Police confirmed they were called to the scene at 3:40 a.m. on June the 20th. The driver of the Kia, a 20-year-old man from Curdridge, suffered minor injuries and was taken to hospital as a precaution. No other injuries were reported. Two other people were in the car at the time of the collision, but had left the scene by the time officers arrived. Investigations are ongoing. Councillor Rob Humby, Executive Member for Environment and Transport at Hampshire County Council, said, "At this stage, we are unaware of this incident. We carried out some safety enhancements at the junction of Winchester Road and Mortimer's Lane in 2012 and were pleased with the outcome. However, we will of course carefully consider any further works that may be required following the police report and any subsequent investigation on this recent incident. Traffic on the junction is set to increase markedly should Eastleigh Borough Council approve plans for major housing development in the nearby Fair Oak and Bishopstoke area." And there are two photographs, one of the wall, which is absolutely devastated, and the cars are on the drive, which seem quite wrecked. It's amazing that nobody was injured more seriously.
And this article is headlined, "No Idling Work at School." And it's accompanied by a picture of a couple of children and the head of environmental health outside the St. Bede Church of England Primary School. And will probably be familiar to many of us who live close to primary school, where parents collecting and delivering their children will often sit in their cars with their engines running. The article reads, "Winchester City Council marked National Clean Air Day by asking St. Bede Primary School to run a No Idling poster competition. The winning entries have been chosen to create posters to be displayed at the school gates and around the city to raise the awareness of air quality and particularly to encourage drivers to reduce their impact by turning off their engines while stationary. The winners were Isla in year two, who won a day out at Marwell Activity Centre, and Bella in year four, who won a family ticket to Winchester Science Centre for the Clean Air Exhibition. Councillor Jan Warwick, portfolio holder for Environment, said, and I quote, "We all take our right to clean air for granted, and yet we all contribute to the pollution problem when we drive to school and work every day. Winchester City Centre currently has a designated air quality management area, and the council is taking steps to bring our air quality here in compliance with national standards by 2020. Winchester Action on Climate Change and the council marked the day with a clean air workshop at St. Peter's Church in Jury Street.
Woman fatally struck by train. Rail passengers faced a day of travel disruption this week after a woman was hit by a train near the city. Emergency services confirmed the woman had died after the incident on the railway at around 11:45 a.m. on Monday. Usually busy platforms were empty through the afternoon at Winchester Station, near to where it is thought the woman was hit on the county's main railway line. The woman was pronounced dead at the scene, with officers working to identify her and notify next of kin. The incident is not being treated as suspicious, and a file is being prepared for the coroner. As a result, passengers faced an evening of rush hour mayhem on the line, which connects the county to London, with the railway line being blocked between Southampton Central and Basingstoke for around 4 hours. Delays remained in place until 8 p.m, although the lines reopened shortly before 3 p.m. In a statement on their website, a British Transport Police spokesman said, "We have been made aware of an incident between Basingstoke and Eastleigh. As a result, all lines are currently blocked whilst emergency services attend the site. Until the lines are reopened, no trains are currently able to travel through this area in either direction." During the afternoon, gates were put above subway entrances to the platform, with queues of passengers waiting for replacement services outside Winchester Station.
Scorching heatwave poised to continue. Health warnings have been issued and residents have been warned to expect travel disruption during a heatwave currently sweeping across the UK. After a weekend of wall-to-wall sunshine, temperatures in Hampshire have hit around 29 degrees Celsius, shy of the 35.6 UK June record recorded in Southampton in 1976. The Met Office has said that there is a good chance that the warm weather will continue next week, despite showers forecast this Saturday. There have been warnings that it could get so hot the railway lines between Southampton and London could buckle. TUC General Secretary Francis O'Grady called on bosses to ensure that staff have protective clothing and sunscreen provided. Urging everyone to take precautions, Met Office forecaster Mark Foster said, "High pressure is going to dominate this week, so we can expect very high levels of pollen and UV. If you are in the sun, you have a greater chance of getting burnt in the short term. Long days, very still conditions and clear skies help June temperatures to get very intense. The sun in June is relatively the highest it gets in the sky, and heat can build up over successive days. South Western Railway is urging people using trains to carry water with them to avoid overheating, and drivers are being warned about the dangers of dehydration. Research shows that dehydration can lead to slower reaction times, loss of focus and muscle cramps." Ian Templeton, Director of Communications at Road Safety GB, said, "Making sure you are fully hydrated is a vital part of that process. The safety of vulnerable road users around you depends upon it. very high levels of pollen and UV mean that hay fever sufferers are in for a difficult time, while health experts are urging the public to look out for those who could be badly affected by the heat. Dr. Owen Landegg of Public Health England said, "Much of the advice on beating the heat is common sense. For older people, those with underlying health conditions, and those with young children, the summer heat can bring real health risks." And there is a photograph of someone, a young lady, enjoying the sun, sitting on the grass with her shoes off.
The next article is headlined, "Prosecutions to Prevent Countryside Being Trashed." And it's accompanied by a group of involved people standing out in the gorgeous sunshine out in the countryside. Civic chiefs, environmental groups and the police have joined together to keep the Hampshire countryside from being, quote, trashed by dumped waste. As part of a new campaign, their message is, fly tipping will no longer be tolerated here. Using the social media hashtag, #responsiblerubbish, along with social media adverts, the partnership wants to make the public aware of how they can stop the growing trend. The County Council says that the main aim is to make residents aware that if they use an unregistered waste carrier and their rubbish ends up dumped, they themselves, as well as the tippers, could face prosecution and an unlimited fine. Representatives from the partner organisations gathered at Farley Mount, which has been spoiled by fly-tipped waste on several occasions. This campaign is about educating the public and to make sure that when they dispose of their waste, they do so responsibly, said the county's fly-tipping chief, Gareth Edwards. If you get someone to dispose of your waste, you must check if they are a registered waste carrier. You have a duty of care to make sure that your waste is disposed of carefully and properly. There is no excuse. He added, we are all taxpayers, and if we are spending money clearing up waste that has been fly-tipped, you have to think, what else could that money have been spent on? It is disgusting that people still do this when there are waste centres open 7 days a week across the county.
Except that they'd have to pay.
New ministerial role for George. Theresa May has appointed her long-term aide to fill the gap at the Department for International Trade left by the resignation of Greg Hands. Just hours after Mr. Hands quit in order to vote against the government on Heathrow expansion, George Hollingbury was named as his replacement in Liam Fox's department. Mr. Hollingbury, 53-54, has served as the PM's parliamentary private secretary, often known as a minister's bag carrier, since she took office following the EU referendum in 2016. And he held the same post with Mrs. May during her time at the Home Office, serving as PPS from 2012 until 2015, until he was appointed a senior whip by David Cameron. It is a first ministerial job for the MP for Meon Valley, who entered Parliament in 2010 and lives in Alsford. An Oxford-educated entrepreneur and property investor, 54-year-old Mr. Hollingbury's biggest business success was the companion care chain of Vets Surgeries. Mr. Hollingbury got involved in politics in 1997, excuse me, after joining a campaign to stop a Waitrose supermarket in Alsford. He served on the town council and was later deputy leader of Winchester City Council. He supported Remain in the 2016 referendum. He said of his promotion, I am very proud to be given this position and I look forward to quickly getting to grips with the brief. The Department of International Trade has a vitally important role in securing Britain's continued prosperity. It will be even more important after we leave the EU, and I will work very hard with my colleagues to make sure we have the skills, policy and expertise to secure global trade and influence in the years to come.
Professor Biddle to lecture about Christ's tomb. Renowned archaeologist Martin Biddle will shed light on one of the holiest shrines in Christendom in a talk on Monday, July the 2nd at 7:30 p.m. Professor Biddle will speak at the Winchester Catholic History Group meeting at the Pastoral Centre, St. Peter's Church, Jewry Street. The edicule, the little house, which encloses all that remains of what is believed to be the rock-cut tomb in which the body of Jesus was laid after the crucifixion, and from which he is believed to have ascended into heaven, stands today at the centre of the rotunda of the Church of the Holy Sepulchre in Jerusalem. The present edicule, built after a fire in 1810, stood untouched until 2015-17, when a major cleaning and restoration of the exterior and interior of the edicule was undertaken by the conservators of the Greek National Technical University of Athens. Professor Biddle and his late wife made a detailed survey of the edicule as it was in the 1980s and 1990s, described in his book, The Tomb of Christ, published in 1998. Professor Biddle took a close interest throughout the recent work of conservation and restoration and was present for its completion. He will show what has been achieved and will reveal and discuss the discoveries made inside the burial chamber in the period of 60 hours made available for its investigation in October 2016. The burial slab, which has covered the rock-cut burial couch since the 11th century, was carefully withdrawn to reveal the broken pieces of an older burial slab of black marble. The date of this older slab is discussed on the basis of scientific dating of the mortar on which it was laid, and the implications of this work for the understanding of the tomb are considered. Entrance is £5 at the door, students £2.50 with ID, or further information and reserve a ticket from the parish office at 01962 852804. That's 01962 852804, or you can email the office at office@stpetersWinchester.org.uk.
And this next article, which seems to reinforce that it's all happening in Alsford these days, is titled 320 Home Sun Lane Plan Backed, and is accompanied by a photograph of the farmland at Sun Lane, Alsford, where 320 houses will be built. A controversial expansion of a Hampshire market town has been approved by planners. City councillors on the planning committee unanimously supported the scheme for 320 homes, new open space, and an industrial estate on farmland to the east of Alsford. The proposal by Seaward Developments has been highly contentious, with some 189 formal objections from nearby residents. One of the main bones of contention was the new access off the A31 town bypass to service the industrial estate. But the scheme has been worked up for several years in conjunction with the town council and with much public consultation. It has caused a spat within the Conservative Party. City MP Steve Brine called for a deferral until assurances were given around the traffic impact. But local city councillor Lisa Griffiths said, "Steve Brine has, throughout the years of debate on the Sun Lane site, maintained that it's not his role to comment on planning issues, despite the strategic nature of this proposal. I am therefore extremely disappointed that he should make these remarks at this very late stage. Our officers, both at the city and county councils, have gone to considerable lengths to ensure that they feel confident in their recommendation to approve the Sun Lane application, and to publicly dispute their work is shameful. Speakers against the scheme included City Councillor Kim Gottlieb and the parish councils of Bishop Sutton and Cheriton, which fear the impact of extra traffic. But the Arlesford Society supported the plan, as did local resident John Cranfield, who said the benefits include public open space, ecology, biodiversity, drainage and employment opportunities. Mr. Cranfield told the Chronicle, "I am sure that there will be a backlash to this decision from the small minority in our town." It was pointed out by Councillor Lisa Griffiths that in the past, 1,200 homes were built from the late 1970s onwards, and the figure of 320 homes is a fraction of that. He said the objectors have dominated the debate for too long, and it is time to work with everyone involved to find the right solution for the development of Arlesford and Winchester District.
For this week, thank you to our editors, Angela Ling, Carol Fraser and Jane Thomas. Thanks to our copying, dispatch and studio preparation teams. And thanks to our readers, Maria Head.
Goodbye.
Andrew Parkinson.
Goodbye.
And Daphne Poupart.
Goodbye.
And from me, Vara Williams. Goodbye and have a good week. Please post your memory sticks back as soon as possible in the yellow wallet. And when you put your label inside, please make sure that the cord attached to the stick is fully inside the wallet as well. Thank you.